Welcome back to the home of explanations. You've got more than money. You've got Gene Dickinson, your host, your personal financial advisor, providing you with absolutely the best, most transparent, fiduciary-based explanations in your financial world that we have available to you, which is why I'm going to have to correct myself. Oh, I was going to say it's painful. It isn't painful at all. That's why we have great listeners. We have one gentleman in particular who is a tremendous support to us. He's also a CPA and helps us out when Gene makes mistakes. And so Gene made a mistake this morning when we talked about the gentleman who had a $4,800 deduction on losses for last year, 2015. And I suggested he might be able to push those to 2016. James made sure that I understood, no, Gene. And he was very polite. He didn't start out with dear Bobo head. No, Gene, that's not exactly how the IRS code writes or is written. The IRS code says even if you don't take it, it's as if you did take it. So even if he doesn't get benefit of the $3,000 deduction last year, it's as if he took it, and his available deduction this year would only be $1,800. So I stand corrected. Quite often, if I'm in my office, I sit corrected. But in this case, I truly am standing at the microphone corrected. James, thanks so very much. And to the young man who asked, should he file an amended return?
Yep.
Our answer has changed. Now, one thing that I can absolutely guarantee you, financial advisors are not allowed to guarantee much of anything. But I guarantee you that if you're invested in the stock market over the last 18 months or so, you've been scratching your head a fair amount. You might even occasionally have been using adult language. Because the volatility we've seen has been unprecedented and may actually be just the start of what is the new normal. We'll find out here in a moment. Every investor has questions about what's been going on, why has it been going on, and what are we looking forward to for the future. So we turn to experts that we trust, and we have on the phone Randy Swan. Randy, good morning, sir.
Good morning. Good morning to you. It's great to be on your show today.
It's very kind of you. You are calling us from where?
Puerto Rico.
Oh, so you're in our time zone this morning.
Well, actually, right now we're 1 hour ahead of Eastern time zone, so we're on Atlantic time zone right now.
So it's a little after 10 for you?
That's exactly right.
So, here I am feeling bad that we got Randy up early. And he's been cruising. You probably had you're on your second or third cup of coffee already.
Exactly.
God bless you, sir. Thanks for being part of our show this morning.
Sure thing.
Yeah, for folks who have not had the opportunity to hear you as one of our guests many times in the past, give them a sense of what are your days filled with? What does Randy Swan do for us and for our investors?
Well, I started a company about 18 years ago that has a unique solution to managing market risk. So I'm a fundamental believer that no one knows exactly what's going to happen in the market. No one can time or predict what's going to happen. So our view is very simple, is that we think that you should always be hedged to eliminate the downturns that regularly occur in the market.
And they do regularly occur. So from our standpoint, we're premised on something that has some reality to it, as opposed to perhaps the naive new investor who thinks there's something wrong if the market goes down.
Well, that's exactly right. I think statistically, I think bear markets occur about every 3.5 years, and I think we know that usually it's in the 30 to 40% range of a normal bear market. So I think I would say statistically we're long overdue. And, of course, we don't know necessarily the U.S. markets if they're in a bear market at this point. But I know a lot of the different various indices around the world are significantly down from last year's levels. So we'll see how it plays out.
In light of recent volatility, in light of worldwide markets being down, in light of issues earlier this year, China was in the press for creating a pretty significant downdraft on the U.S. equity markets. Does that change your approach to how you invest your clients' money?
You know what? Actually, it does not. Like I said, we're not into the market prediction game. We're systematically trying to manage market risk by using options to hedge the downside exposure in the market. So whether this market is down 20 or 30% this year or even up 10 or 15, it really doesn't change our strategy year to year. It's the same concept of always being invested, always being hedged, and allowing the investor, quite frankly, to take their emotions out of the game, which, as we both know, that's usually one of the biggest problems you have in the investing world is individuals get emotional about their money. It's totally understandable, but this is a strategy that allows people to leave their emotions at the door.
Randy, most folks have heard the word options. Most folks have absolutely no idea how they work or why they might be beneficial for someone investing in the stock market. Can you give us the options 101 description and fill in the blanks a bit?
Sure. Well, an option is a financial product. It's a derivative, which means it derives its value from some underlying. And in this example, we use the S&P 500. So you're able to go out in the market and buy an option that allows you to have appreciation on the upside or protection on the downside, or even speculation in that sense. So what the most practical way I look at what we do is that, you know, we look at our financial lives and say you insure your life, your cars, your houses, your health. Why not your portfolio? And so an option is like an insurance policy to protect the downside. And that's probably the most simplistic way to do it. Obviously, there's a lot more nuances and complications beyond that. But at the end of the day, you're buying something that will protect your portfolio on a defined amount over a certain period of time, just like you would use to invest to insure your house.
So fundamentally, what you're doing is acquiring investments that under normal circumstances are going to go up and down, but the options allow you to minimize the negative impacts should those investments or when those investments actually go down.
Exactly. And I think one of the distinctions is a lot of people think that, the industry answer for managing market risk is really diversification or modern portfolio theory. So, you know, that is basically combining different assets together, and you hope that when one is going up, there's some offsetting natures of some assets going down. But unfortunately, the problem is you really can't count on that. There's no guarantee that's going to happen. I think last year was a perfect example, using gold as an example. Gold was down last year, despite the fact that most of the markets across the world were also down. So a lot of people like to use gold as a hedge. But like I said, the correlation is not necessarily always there. But when you invest in an option in your portfolio to protect the downside, you know if the market drops 20%, that option is going to perform as you expect. There's not a lot of variability or there's not a lot of risk in the sense that that option is going to go up in value. So that's one of the main differences. You're really trying to get assets that are truly offsetting in nature on the downside. And so you pay a premium for a certain level of protection. And just like when you insure your house against fire or water damage or whatever, you're really trying to, you're investing in money in an option to make sure that if the market goes down, your assets are protected.
Interesting. Very interesting indeed. For most of our audience, 2008 is still a pretty vivid memory of the kind of the bottom dropping out of the market. And back to your observation that asset allocation, for example, is often touted as an opportunity for reducing risk. If you have some money in bonds, stocks generally, if they drop, bonds will go up. 2008, that simply didn't happen for the vast majority of both the equity and the fixed income markets. How did Swan kind of rank, or how did Swan kind of perform in that kind of a downward push?
Right. Well, in 2008, in our separately managed account program, I think our strategy was down about 4.5%, and that was compared to, I think, a 37% drop in the S&P. I think your traditional kind of 60-40, 60% stocks, 40% bonds, I think was down in somewhere in the 25 to 30% range. So, once again, it goes back to buying something that you know is going to perform as expected. Now, of course, there's always a cost to that. So, you know, you would expect that when you have to invest in something that's going to protect you on the downside, you're going to drag and you're going to underperform on the upside, which is, of course, is where our strategy is designed to work. But really, at the end of the day, for investors, it's really a combination of the upside and downside market capture. And so the right combination ends up allowing you to hopefully outperform the market over an entire investment cycle, which is our stated kind of goal at Swan, is that we offer our defined risk strategy on multiple different assets, things like S&P 500, foreign developed, small cap, gold, et cetera. So at the end of the day, you're taking a lot of the volatility out. You're changing the distribution of outcomes, and we think over a full market cycle, a hedge strategy can actually outperform the underlying index or benchmark that you're trying to invest in.
Randy, I'm going to feed that back to you, and I need you to feel free to correct me if I've misinterpreted what you said. If using 2008 as an example, if the stock market, pure stock market exposure was down 37, if a blended portfolio was down 25, and if a particular strategy, in this case Swan defined risk, excuse me, is down, say, 4 for a nice round number, the recovery that's necessary to get Swan back into positive territory is dramatically less than it would be for a full market exposure or even a balanced approach. So the opportunity in subsequent years, 2009 and 10, 11, when the markets were moving forward, is statistically a better probability that we'll get a good result, even though we're kind of blunted on the upside a bit, because we haven't dropped as low. Does that kind of reflect what you're saying?
No, exactly. And I think that one of the unique features about our strategy that really actually lessens that recovery time period, I think the average stock market investor had probably about a 4-year recovery time period. So I think it was sometime in 2012 or 13, I think, where the buy and hold investor kind of got back to where they were. But one of the things we do during bear markets is that we sell those options at a substantial profit during bear markets, buy another option to protect the portfolio from further declines, and then use that excess cash to buy more additional shares. And so, effectively, your average, dollar cost averaging down at the right time. And the beauty of it is that the profit from the put options that you're using to hedge actually give you the money to actually invest at a low. And of course, everyone knows the concept of buying low and selling high. It's harder in concept, but this strategy actually works in your benefit to actually substantially lower the recovery time period because you're not coming off such a low level.
Randy, makes a great deal of sense. The vast majority of our audience, and we're blessed, our audience is from literally 9 and 10-year-olds. I had little Jimmy ask me about Kanye West a couple weeks ago. That was an interesting question. To 90-year-olds. But I'm absolutely certain the vast majority of our audience are fundamentally conservative financially and otherwise. And they are concerned about downward pressure more than they're concerned about upward gain. So what you're describing seems to fit them pretty well. Are there types of investors for which your approach isn't appropriate?
Well, someone that is very bullish on the stock market and wants to allocate virtually all their assets to the stock market portfolio, that probably wouldn't be suitable. Our strategy probably wouldn't be suitable just because, as I said, the upside capture is less than all of it, than what you'd get in a long-only portfolio. That being said, almost everyone comes back to the whole concept of diversifying. And so the question is, how much are you going to allocate to stocks? And if you are very bullish, then you can allocate more to stocks if you put some of your portfolio in our strategy, because we do have the downside protection. So we really have the whole gamut of people that invest. But obviously, I'm sure a lot of your listeners in this situation, most people cannot afford to go through another 2008 scenario, especially as you approach retirement years. So it's one of those kind of things where the sequencing of returns, if you're nearing retirement or early in retirement, going through a 2008 scenario is not something that, quite frankly, that most people can handle.
No, absolutely not. You're quite right. Now, this year, of course, we've had not only tremendous volatility, but I think January, and I'm going by memory, I think the market was down 6 or 7% just in January alone. February's had some bounce, March this past week, we've had some reasonable returns. But if you look at the broad market, negative returns are to be found in tons and tons and tons of sectors. I think I checked this morning that on the mutual fund side, you guys are slight negatives, like 0.4%. Do I have my numbers correct?
I'm not exactly sure, but I think that sounds right.
Okay,
so, the way we structured our portfolio is that we have a certain amount of exposure on the first 10% drop in the market, and then as the market goes beyond that 10%, we actually have less and less exposure on the downside. Exactly.
So again, your observation about folks who are either retired or soon to retire needing to be concerned about the big hit coming at exactly the wrong time. If you decided that, January 1st, 2009 is my retirement, I am targeted, and you had 100% in the stock market in 08, all of a sudden, whatever you had that you thought was enough is now 40% less. That's just a dreadful result, and your approach is designed to make sure that doesn't happen.
Exactly. And we actually have, on our website, we have one of our research guys wrote a paper called The Retirement Conundrum, Untying the Gordian Knot, and it really kind of addresses some of the problems or some of the challenges that faces retirees right now about how you build a portfolio in today's market environment, knowing that fixed income is not designed, or at this point is not, the yields are not high enough to really do what they are intended to do.
Indeed.
So it's really put everyone in a bad situation to kind of actually search out for strategies like ours, because the government obviously has controlled the interest rates to a large degree and really taken away that opportunity for retirees to invest in fixed income and get a, let's just say, historically normal yield.
So they've got to look elsewhere.
Exactly.
Indeed. For fun, because you've already been very, very clear that nobody can predict the future. Nobody knows where markets are going. But you've been in this for a long time now. Give me a rough idea. Your group manages how many dollars, roughly?
About $2.5 billion.
That's a significant sum of money. So I'm sure that you've even in just day to day developed some opinions about why the market is so incredibly volatile at this point. Swings, intraday swings of 200 or 300 points have almost become normal. And do you have an opinion both of why that's been happening, and do you have an opinion about is that going to continue?
Well, I absolutely think it's going to continue. I think the reason why is that you've got a lot more high-frequency traders. You've got a lot of trading algorithms and programs out there that are going to take advantage of and that are pushing that. I mean, I think fundamentally you've got, this is, of course, my opinion, but I think the federal government has done everything it can to try to keep things going, keep the pump primed, and keep the economy going. And when you do that, when you go to the extremes lengths that they have gone to do that, I think you just add... I go back to the analogy of kind of a forest fire, right? When you talk about not allowing small forest fires to occur, you ultimately have a forest fire and it's really big. I would use the same analogy in our markets right now. The U.S. government and the world governments around the globe have pretty much made a conscious decision to try to avoid any type of recessions or even worse depressions, and they've used all their tools in their arsenal to try to prevent any type of negativity that occurs in the market. And I think when that, when the next bear market occurs, it's probably going to be pretty ugly.
Any predictions about when that might occur?
Well, I mean, if you look at the global markets, I would say we're already in a bear market.
Got it.
For the U.S.
Mm-hmm.
I would say that we're kind of sitting on the precipice of potentially a bear market. I know that we've had a rally over the last couple weeks that's made up a lot of the losses this year, but I think statistically we're due for a bear market. As I said, I don't know exactly when that's going to occur, but I think it's a high likelihood that we're probably starting one right now.
Got it. Randy, I appreciate you taking part of your time from Puerto Rico this morning to spend with us. You've given our listeners a tremendous amount of material to think about, and the use of options as a hedging strategy versus others that have the potential or the opportunity or at least the belief that they may work using options is a strategy that works. And over 18 years and $2.5 billion, you've got a lot of track record to support that. Randy, thanks very much for your time.
Thank you. I enjoyed being on the show.
You take care, sir.
Bye.
Bye-bye. Puerto Rico, that's nice. I bet it's a little warmer there. Just guessing. Very, very interesting. Very, very interesting. One of the reasons I find the Randy Swann's approach interesting is that, number one, he uses a strategy, the hedging strategy, the options, the purchase of options, not as a guarantee that nothing bad can ever happen. You never heard him use the word guarantee. It's not in his vocabulary because that's not what he does. It's a hedge is a protection. It is an opportunity to give you some recourse in the event of a catastrophe. And you heard him say that as markets decline further, the protections get deeper and deeper. So he actually can target in many ways how much of a decline the fund can absorb. You've heard some of his numbers. By the way, interesting, just so that everyone out there can understand kind of my perspective. Every single number we talked about relative to his performance this morning was a negative number. If all you did was listen to this morning's conversation with Randy, you might interestingly assume all this guy does is lose money. Not the case. If you look at the track record, do the research, see if it makes some sense for you, you're going to find some very positive numbers. You're going to find positive numbers, hopefully, in almost any investment that you're considering. And salespeople want you to only focus on the positive. Financial advisors want you to understand the negative. They want you to understand worst case. They want you to understand downside. They want you to understand risk. They want you to understand when people say, well, let's talk about the pros and the cons. They usually have like 91 pros and one con. Well, you know, the paper's only, it's like off-white. It should have been white. Are you kidding me? We've got to consider the significance and the impact of whatever negatives are out there. So when we're talking about negative returns, Einstein was right. Everything is relative. If you heard negative minus four in 2008 when the stock market was minus 37 and the balanced portfolio was minus 20, if you heard minus four and go, well, that's not very good because he lost money. Probably not for you. If you heard minus four and went, are you kidding me? We were down 35%. Minus four would have been a gift from the heavens. Then maybe it's something you take a peek at. Interesting idea. By the way, before we change the subject totally, which we will in the next half hour, I want you to be aware that there are a fair number of companies out there now that are purporting to be able to teach you how to apply options strategies to your own investments in stocks. And every one of them promises that you're going to make buckets of money every single time, independent of the stock market result. This is a big steaming pile of hoo-ha. If you're managing $2.5 billion, you've been doing it for 18 years, I think you've got the requisite experience. If you heard the word options and thought, you know what, I'll spend 10 minutes study up on those and start using them myself, I think that's an error in judgment. 610-720-7900, gene@askmtm.com, morethanmoneyonline.com. I want to take your questions, your calls, your concerns in the final half hour of today's show. So get yourself in the queue. And we'll serve you as best we are able after this on More Than Money. Welcome back to the home of explanations. You've got more than money. You've got Gene Dickinson, your host, your personal financial advisor. If you would like something explained to you, explain to you, Lucy. I am happy to do that. By the way, I think KYW News Radio, they have a guy covering the Phillies, Ricky Ricardo. That's what I thought. No way, but he's been a couple of years. Just saying. Happy to explain things to you. 610-720-7900, morethanmoneyonline.com, Gene at askmtm.com. Let's go to the phones. We talk to David. David, good morning, sir.
Good morning, Gene. Thanks for taking the call.
Oh, my pleasure. How may we serve you?
It was a great interview with Swan. And the other thing is, thanks for pointing us towards Marcus Lemonne. I find him very entertaining as well as interesting from the standpoint of what he does.
I enjoy his program as well, and you're right, there's a lot to be learned and there's a lot of entertainment with that. Yes.
Oh yeah. My question is this. Within an IRA that's based on equities, can you deduct the losses in those equities over the year, as they're bought and sold?
Sadly, the answer is no. The IRS position is that you got a tax deduction for putting money into the account,
right?
So that anything that happens under that umbrella, bad or good, is not a taxable event until you withdraw the funds. And then theoretically, let's pick a dramatically nasty scenario. You had money that grew to $100,000 and then fell back to $50,000. If you withdrew it, you're only going to pay tax on the $50,000. So it's not as if you're getting stuck paying tax on a much higher number. It's whatever the value is as you withdraw it. So sadly, losses in an IRA provide no tax relief at all.
Unfortunately, it hasn't been bad, but
God
thank
bless
you very much, and that's the way I understand it. Thank you.
Thank you, sir. Take care. 610-720-7900. Gene at askmtm.com. A real quick thanks to one of our loyal listeners who provides us with nearly an unending stream of invitations that she gets to seminars provided by other financial advisors. This one I found particularly interesting for two reasons. Number one, their claims were not particularly over the top. Now, that's unusual because most of these, you look at them and you're going, are you kidding me? You can't do one third of what you're claiming to do. And in this case, I did not find that. What I did find, however, one of the things that we look for when we're looking at these kind of invitations is that if the company representation, if they are fiduciaries, then there are certain disclosures that must be included in the invitations to let you know their fiduciary status. They do not appear. There are no disclosures here. And that caused me to suspect that these folks are not fiduciaries. They talk about eliminating losses during market corrections. Huh. Sounds a lot like fixed indexed annuities. Why indexing is taking the financial world by storm. Huh. Sounds a lot like indexed annuities. Long-term care protection without paying premiums. Huh. Sounds a lot like... Sometimes these lack of disclosures simply mean somebody made a mistake, that they are fiduciaries and that they just simply, the printer made a mistake or they made a mistake. So I went on their website and found out and confirmed that indeed they are not. They have radio shows or they have lots of insignias or lots of logos for radio stations. But they are not fiduciaries by any stretch of the imagination. And when I went to their website, two things jumped out at me. Number one, they have a fair number of testimonials. That tells me as well that they are not fiduciaries. Registered investment advisors are not permitted by law to have testimonials. So if you find testimonials on a person or a financial person's website, you can absolutely draw the correct inference that they are not registered investment advisors and therefore not fiduciaries. And one of the claims on their website, they are the top. And you know what? I don't know. It's at top. I jotted this down. It may have been one of the top, but it's by memory. I'm going top index annuity companies in the country. So one of the top index annuity companies in the country. Nothing wrong with that. If you're proud of how many dollars you have sold of indexed annuities, there's absolutely nothing wrong with that. And that's, by the way, how they would be termed one of the top companies, is how many dollars of their clients they have invested in fixed indexed annuities. Bless them. That does not make them financial advisors, not by a stretch. Although, their website does claim that they are wealth advisors. Yeah, not really clear about that. I'm neither clear nor confident that that is true. It's kind of like going to you have a problem with your back, and you go to the world's leading back surgeon. Huh. Well, surgeon's pretty clear, but you know, hey, if you've got a problem with your back and you need surgery, you want the world's leading surgeon. What if your back problem could have been corrected with chiropractic or a massage or physical therapy? Wouldn't you wish to be served medically by a professional that had your best interest at heart and wasn't concerned about whether the answer was surgery or chiropractic or therapy or medication? Fill in the blanks. Wouldn't you want, if you had that choice, and of course you do, of course you do, in the medical community, of course you do. Can you go to an orthopedic group that offers all of those modalities? Sure. Of course you can. And is it also possible you could go to an orthopedic person or group that offers just one thing? Sure. I don't know why you would do that. I truly don't. Why would you go, as my dad, who was a carpenter, said many, many times, if the only tool that you own is a hammer, everything looks like a nail. So if the only solution you have is a particular annuity product, every solution is an annuity product. If the only medical procedure you can do is a surgery, everything looks like a surgery to you. Does that make sense? Yeah, I scratch my head. I really, really do, with folks who make that choice of choosing to deal only with a kind of a one product organization. Now, I absolutely get why they might choose to do that. I absolutely get that from a revenue generation standpoint, from a compensation standpoint. I get that. But I don't understand you if you choose that the only person I'm going to talk to is somebody who can only do one thing, as opposed to evaluate the full spectrum of what's available and what's best for you. What's best for you, by the way, that's the definition of a fiduciary. A gentleman writes, okay, I'm feeling a little embarrassed to ask. That scared me right there. I just talked medical. I have no interest in rubber gloves or... I don't want to. You've talked about this question a couple times in recent shows, but here it goes. We've got a 401k at work, and of course, it's often what we talk about at lunch because the market stinks. Well, thanks for being clear. We're all in our early to mid 50s, hope to retire someday. The question is maximum contribution. We've been told by HR it's 16% of our pay. That's not what you've been saying. Is it different for us because our company has less than 50 employees? I'll be listening with fingers crossed because there's lunch riding on this. Hey, lunch is important. Let's not put lunch down. I'm going to be as delicate as I can be here because I think it's important. It's important to be diplomatic, just like Donald Trump. Those guys stink. They're huge liars. Or Marco Rubio. He's a con man. He's a con. Jeez. He's so little. Anyway. Gene's right. Your HR is wrong. It has nothing to do with 50 employees. And when I saw that, I thought, gosh, does it? Because I had never even heard the issue of 50 employees unless you were talking about Obamacare. And maybe that's where the confusion comes in, especially with smaller companies. It's hard to know all the rules and regs. It is really, really hard to know all the ins and outs of medical coverage and employee benefits and life insurance and disability. Oh, my gosh, your head hurts. I'll give you a perfect example. More Than Money. We have 11 employees. We are financial advisors. 780 years of experience. CPAs, tax advisors. We have estate counsel, attorneys helping us on counseling our clients on estates. Insurance experts. We got it. Yeah, we outsource our HR. We absolutely are happy to engage an HR service who provides us with counsel. So the 50 employee thing, I'm going, maybe? Is it something I never heard of? Because that happens. That happens. And the answer is no. Let's use an employee with a $50,000 income as an example because it makes for simple math. If the HR person were correct, 16% of $50,000 is $8,000. And that would be the maximum that these individuals, I don't know if they're all guys or girls, if they're goofy like this, they're probably all guys. If 16% were true, then 8,000 is the max that they could put in earning 50 grand. The reality is it is not true. It is not a percentage. It's a dollar amount. And in 2016, the maximum base amount that an employee can invest, contribute, $18,000. And because he goes on to say they're in their early to mid-50s, and they hope to retire someday. if you are 50 or older, there is what's referred to as a catch-up provision. That was proposed by Senator Hines. I'm kidding. Anyway, and that catch-up is $6,000 a year. So if you are 50 or older and you're in a 401k, it doesn't matter the size of your company. It is an issue of cash flow. If you're able to put maximum $24,000 a year away, that means if you're earning 50, you're contributing roughly half of your income. A lot of folks out there listening are going, yeah, right. I get it. Under most circumstances, just not possible. But there are certain circumstances where it absolutely might be. For example, let's say they are a two-income family. And as families of the greatest generation, the folks coming out of World War II in the 40s, 50s, and 60s did, if they were a two-income family, they lived on one. Very common. Very, very common. They both worked. They both had incomes. They lived on one income. They saved the other. And if that were the case here, it would be a tremendous opportunity because you could save half of this income tax deductibly. Fantastic. Maybe the company matches, maybe they don't. Who cares? Well, of course you care if they're matching. But bottom line is it's icing on the cake. It's not the cake. The cake is if you can deduct $24,000 off of your $50,000 income, your taxable income drops by that amount. If you're in the 20% bracket, I'm picking one because it's an easy bracket. You could be in the zero. I don't know. You could be in the 43%. I don't know. Use 20 It's easy math. If you put 24 grand away, you're going to save almost $5,000 in income taxes. And let's say you're just for fun, you're 55, and you're going to work 10 more years. $5,000 saved per year for the next 10 years, an extra $50,000 in your pocket. Not to mention, if you're putting $24,000 a year away over the next 10 years, that's an extra $250,000 in your retirement fund. That's if it earns zero. And I hope it earns more than zero. No guarantees. Actually, in a lot of 401k plans, there are stable value funds. There are guarantees. So 16%, wrong. 50 employees, doesn't matter. Small company, they're going to struggle to have a decent plan. No, 401k plans can be world class. It doesn't matter the size of the company. Ironically, some of the biggest companies in the Lehigh Valley have 401k plans that are average at best from an investment standpoint. And some of the smaller companies, some would say some of the smallest companies, have wonderful 401k plans, because a world class plan does not cost the company one penny more than a stinky plan. Stinky, yeah, absolutely. If you walk by your 401k plan, you go, ooh, is there a baby in here? who brought in diapers? Then that's not good, and that could be fixed. Thanks so much for the question. Very, very, very interesting. Hey, hi. Connie Plaha, if you've been in the world headquarters, you've met Connie. She's fantastic. Part of our More Than Money team, and everybody with a brain loves her. Fantastic. She had a chance this past week to scoop by a program in Allentown, Lehigh Valley Active Life. It used to be called the Senior Center. And she brought me back. It's called Programs, Activities, and Resources for Seniors. It's a book. You cannot believe what's going on. By the way, so much so, I'm looking at this going, you're kidding me. They go to Broadway? They get bus trips to Broadway to see, I would love to see Finding Neverland. Oh, man, it's got to be fantastic. All at Radio City Music Hall. They've got all kinds of music, all kinds of movies, all kinds of programs. So much so, I don't believe it. I don't believe it. I'm a skeptical kind of guy. It's the way I am. People go, hey, look how cool this is. Maybe. Maybe it's cool. I'll decide if it's cool. And the way we're going to decide if this is cool, we're going to drag those people in here. Nice. Absolutely. I'm going to get somebody in authority over there. I already know the guy. Rick. He's a good guy. We're going to have Rick in, because I'm looking at, you know what? A lot of our clients, a lot of our More Than Money family, they're either retired or soon to retire. And a lot of folks are going, you know, from a social standpoint, it can be kind of hard to make new friends, or it can be hard to, you know what? If you pick up this book, and you just take a peek, and this is just for the first quarter of the year, it's just January through April. If you don't find something in there that you're interested in that you would say, you know what, that would be a ton of fun, then you are absolutely, you got bigger problems than I can fix. So we're going to get Rick in, and I, Lehigh Valley Active Life, if you haven't heard of it, I absolutely need to get you introduced. Very interesting indeed. We're coming to the top of the hour, which means you're calling in right now, we're going to have to talk to you off air, I'm certain. I want to encourage you to head down to Jordan Lane's and make sure you're down there for Bobby Gunther Walsh at noon. Do we have time? Let's go right to the phones. We talked to Dave. Dave, we've got about a minute. Go ahead with your question.
Yes, my wife's pension program is transitioning from a defined benefit to a 403B.
Sure.
I'd like to know the difference between a 403B and a 401K.
Yeah, there really aren't very many differences. In the old days, there were lots of differences because most 403Bs were in the form of tax-sheltered annuities. But most 403Bs today are very similar to 401Ks. You're going to evaluate them exactly the same way. Take a look at the investment lineup and see if it fits your needs or how it fits your needs, if at all. And other than that, you're going to find that the contribution limits are remarkably similar, the function remarkably similar. It's the only distinction is that 403Bs are typically offered by nonprofits.
Yeah, well, this is from the Reading Hospital.
That's pretty typical. And again, if they give you the list or give her the list of the available investment options, if you want to shoot that up to us by email, we'll take a look at it and give you a hand on that as well.
Oh, that would be wonderful, Gene.
Dave, thanks very much for the call.
All right, thank you very much.
Take
care. God bless you.
And you.
Bye.
God bless you indeed. God bless you indeed. And God bless all of you for being part of our show this morning. Voice of an Angel, Natalie Merchant, saying we got to run, which means if you need more information, if you'd like a second opinion meeting at absolutely no charge, no pressure, no obligation, just let me know. Shoot me an email, gene@askmtm.com, gene@askmtm.com. Go online, morethanmoneyonline.com. That gives you tons of information. And, of course, you can always call. And these days, all weekend long, there's likely to be somebody there, 610-746-7007. Folks, thanks so very much. Have a great, great weekend. We'll see you next time on More Than Money.